Here to perform the Star Spangled Banner is an acclaimed singer, songwriter, and a Grammy Award winner from Canton, Ohio, Macy Gray.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose bright stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, all the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Sears up 10. Harden, step back, and the foul! The first of many in red, white, and blue.
Hashtag give the kid a vote.
Bruh. New York strip steak?
This is the Basketball Buds.
Braised beef short ribs? Dang!
Hey, y'all.
With Zach Harper and your favorite athletic writers.
Get mad at me, bro. I'm going on.
Welcome to the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Zach Harper, Jade Hoy producing. We got Trevon Edwards. We got Mo Dakil. We got James Edwards III. Jay King being a coward. Not on this one. Sorry, folks.
And I was with him last night.
Exactly. What? He couldn't podcast? Get out of here.
I think he's afraid of you. Because every time we do the pod, it's either you or him. He's ducking you.
Exactly. It is weird. Yeah. In his defense, we are the two writers.
We don't do his defense here. Especially his.
Especially, yeah, that's fair.
Wait a second. Come on, James Jay. Insinuating? He's like, well, to be fair, we are the only two who really cover something.
Yeah. No. Wow. I meant like we're frequently traveling. No, we're frequently traveling. Hey, I want your guys' jobs. Trust me, I'm jealous.
I don't know, man. You can't just jump into sitting on a couch all day. Okay. Like it's not like you have to ease your way into that. You got to make sure you stay limber. Like it's tough work.
I mean, no, literally like don't jump on the couch. You will break the couch. Like that's what you learn.
It's a good couch, but you can't jump on it.
Yeah. Stop.
We're going to talk a lot. We're going to rehash the 2003 MVP debate where T-Mac is both right and wrong. It's a tease for some kind of amount of minutes from now. We will get into the Brooklyn Nets against the Milwaukee Bucks Saturday night. We will get into LeBron James clearing the air. And we'll get into some wild comments by Charles Oakley that we are definitely not calling you out, Charles Oakley. Just want to make sure you know that we are not calling you out. There is no beef here, but we are going to discuss them. But first, on Friday night, James Harden made his debut for the Philadelphia 76ers. We are recording this about an hour before his second game on Sunday, which is against the New York Knicks for a 1 p.m. Eastern tip-off. So we are recording before that. So I'll assume he lit them up.
Yes.
It is an early game, right? It's an early game, so there's always that factor. But I'll just assume that James Harden was good in game two as well. So we'll get into game one. So, guys, James Harden goes off. Joel Embiid goes off. Tyrese Maxey goes off all in the same game at Minnesota to destroy the Minnesota Timberwolves in the second half, because that game was like a three-point game, a one-point game with a couple minutes left in the second quarter, and then they just broke it wide open the rest of the game. And so James looked great, right? Like, he looked like that hamstring was pretty solid. He looked like he was He was in better shape. It's weird how he manages to get traded and all of a sudden he's like 20 pounds lighter than what he was previously.
He tries on defense.
He tries. Yeah, there's the, you know, he's already in that honeymoon period. But James, what did you see out of the Harden debut just in terms of the fit, everything we've been wondering about? And I think for me, and I don't know if I don't think this is going to be the case every single game, but I liked how Tyrese Maxey fit in right now that he's no longer the lead guard. I thought that was just a great balance for them.
Yeah, no, that's where I was going to take it too. I think kind of like what you said at the top, Harden, when Harden goes to a new place, he looks so locked in. I'm always curious to see how long it lasts, but defensively he did his thing. But like you said, Tyrese Maxey, I think I like the pecking order that they have now. It's obviously Harden and Embiid up top. I thought they played off each other well. I was a little worried of like how Embiid would be impacted by this. Cause I mean, we talk about the post-ups and stuff and whatever, like you have to throw Embiid the ball in the post and then you wonder how Harden reacts and plays off that. But I thought they did a good balance, but Maxey and Tobias Harris now kind of being in their proper roles is going to help Philly. Like you want Maxey to be a secondary ball handler. He can play off the ball. Tobias Harris, we've talked about, I'm sure, a bunch on this pod. Like he's better off as like a tertiary fourth guy. Like he's overqualified right for that. Everything else, he's kind of underqualified. So there's going to be games, and as I'm sure we'll see it in the playoffs, where it's like this is the Tobias Harris game because he is a good player. He's not going to have as much attention. And when you have creators like Harden and Maxey who are able to put the ball on the floor, I think I like the way that it's pieced together. I'm, again, curious to see with time how it looks. But the Harden and Embiid, some DHOs getting downhill. It wasn't a lot of – wasn't a ton of, like, what we've known to watch from James Harden. I just kind of want to watch and see how long that lasts, though.
Yeah, Trey, what did you make of the Harden debut against the Timberwolves the other night and just what that fit was and maybe what you expected and how that shook out?
I thought he looked good, honestly. The pace was kind of intriguing. I mean, I thought that they would be a little bit more slower, which, I mean, they did. Like, they're the new free throw bros. Like, they're getting there every possession, and it's
Splat Brothers.
I don't know. It seemed like the refs kind of context. It seemed like he became likable and went back to his old game soon as he put on a different uniform. Like the refs were giving him his old calls again and he managed to get to the line. And it was kind of strange.
Sorry to, does it feel like we've maybe repealed some of those emphasis from the early on of the season that the refs were doing? Like, yes, I feel like it's not back to the way it was, but we're kind of inching that way towards that.
Slowly but 100%. Surely.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, James Harden trade definitely started benefiting from that, and we know Joel Embiid is drawing that contact.
Yeah, I think James Harden broke the refs. I mean, he's getting to the line a whopping 11 like 11 times a game. Like that, that's intense, dude.
As a like, team, they had
really
like
thinking about it.
They had 26 free throw attempts, I think, in the first half. Like it was crazy.
Sounds about right.
It was something like at one point, I was just like, sheesh. These
kids they might shatter that today against the Knicks. I'm not even going to lie to
you. I'll cover us here. I can't believe the Sixers shot 65 free throws against the Knicks today.
In the first quarter.
In the first quarter. Mitchell Robinson fouled out by the opening tip. It was crazy.
But to shine a light on James, I think that he looked good. I think that, you know, whatever he needed to do, or arrest or whatever, you know what I mean? Yeah. He, you know, got a drive by Anthony Edwards, you know what I mean? And was able to finish and then hit some shots. And, you know, he was finding guys like Tobias Harris and trailing guys. And, you know, guys feel happy. Like, you know, obviously we're getting the hot quotes of like, I've never been this open in my career. And, you know, like you mentioned, this is the honeymoon phase. And then you even have, you know, media outlets saying, you know, marking down the date to the championship. Like to the NBA finals. So like, you know, he's basically become a breath of fresh air in Philly. And I'm rooting for him to succeed in Philadelphia, but I'm going to be realistic and say that we've witnessed the honeymoon phase with every team that he has joined since post Rockets. So, I'm going to be a realist about it and say, curious to see. I know Wednesday is going to be unbearable at home. the first home game.
Oh, my God.
They're probably going to bring McMill out to perform. They're probably going to have a little baby perform. Someone's going to hit, strike the bell.
Yeah.
I could just see it, man. And I just want to see him play
Asher Roth.
Oh, gosh. Asher Roth. That's a throwback. But I really want to see them actually compete against, you know, like, and that's no diss to Minnesota Timberwolves, but I want to see them, you know, play against a Milwaukee Bucks.
A better team. Yeah.
Well, when they have to guard two good wing players and things like that, like when they really have to defend, I think that's going to be a big one. And when they got to play, you know, somebody that can defend them is going to make a big difference. But there were one thing I saw that scared the hell out of me, and I'm pretty sure James Harden has been taken over by an alien. He had a baseline drift. I've never seen him sprint to the corner. And as long as I watched it, Tobias Harris drove baseline and he sprinted to the corner and got a wide open three. If that's what we're going to get from James Harden and he's going to move like that, that's something that's going to be scary for the everybody else. But I want to push back on one thing.
We're probably not going to.
That might be the last time we see this.
Different reasons this will be a scary thing for this, you know, for everyone against the Sixers. Ain't going to be one of them.
But I want to push back a little bit because I don't think they did a good job balancing Embiid in the post. They only got 6 post-ups in the game, according to Synergy. I think that's something that they're going to have to figure out how to get Embiid more post-touches.
Push back on that pushback, Mo, real quick. Okay. I actually don't think you want to post up Karl Anthony Towns if you know with Embiid. I actually think you want him operating in space because Kat doesn't cover that well.
I don't think Kat has done a good job covering Embiid post in the space anywhere. So I don't think that's really the concern. But they get so much off of their offense with him in the post being able to kick out to other guys. Like I think they're going to end up having a double in it just to keep Kat out of foul trouble. Because you know Embiid's going to get to the line in the post, even if he's doing a decent job defending him, Embiid's still going to draw 2 fouls on him quickly. You're going to end up having to double, send help, and that would open up a lot of things for their offense. So that's the one thing I'm going to keep an eye on. And maybe you're right. Maybe it was just against Kat. We'll see what they do against the Knicks when Embiid gets 45 post-ups. But, you know, it'll be something I want to watch for because I think that's going to be a real important thing, especially come playoff time.
Yeah, looking at that game, I do think because Embiid is obviously phenomenal in the post, right? I had a piece last week on just the post scores in the NBA and watching him break down, you know, watching him go in the post and breaking it down with people. Like it was like he is just so skilled, right? And part of it is that he's just a massive, strong human being that one can really move, right? Which is a good start to post play. But he is really just so skilled in how he attacks. So I don't think they want to, you know, lose that. I wonder if it's easier on his body to be operating in the pick and roll throughout. Like I wonder if that's something that could actually benefit them, is having this pick and roll guy who's a threat in James Harden and using that more often instead of just like, all right, go bang on the post, go, you know, go be super physical. I think that should almost be something that is, you know, kind of selectively used for him just to preserve his body. Maybe that's overthinking things, but I wonder if that's a potential benefit to them doing more pick and roll stuff with him and Harden.
I think that's a good point, especially for now, like you said, to preserve him, because as you get, like you guys know, like when the playoffs come, it's as close to old school Charles Oakley, Giannis would come off the bench level basketball as he gets when it comes to the playoffs. So if you can preserve Embiid for that, I think that's a good call. And then also I think it just builds that synergy with him and Harden. Like just anytime you're working in the pick and roll and Harden's going to feed him just to kind of just build the, not necessarily synergy, but just the trust in one another that the other one's going to make the right play.
Mm-hmm. Moving forward, Mo, did you see anything? Cause I know you had some concerns that you had written about with the pairing. Anything that bothered you other than the post play?
No, I thought...
Again, it's one game, so like, what are you going to do?
It's
like,
one game. I mean, I definitely got a text message from one writer going like, you're in trouble because of what I've written. And I just laughed. I said, yeah, because we went so nuts when DeMontis Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox in their first game had a great one.
Who's we?
The collective we. But anyways, but people were going nuts about it. I'm like, it's one game. It looked really good. They did good stuff with the DHO and things like that. I think it gets a little bit harder down the road and in the playoffs when teams kind of get a look at, okay, this is the stuff we're running. All right, we're going to deny the DHO for Harden. Let's see how you react to it. Because the guy set in the first screen is Matisse Thybulle. Like, okay, run a DHO with Thybulle, you know, and going to, like, there's going to be different things into that. I was surprised with how much he moved, but it's like you guys said, let's wait. Let's see what this looks like in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Let's see what Nets Bucks looks like if we get to the playoffs, guys. There's a transition for you. We saw it Saturday night with Kyrie Irving leading the Nets over the Bucks. Kyrie went for what, 38? He was ridiculous in the game. And so I'm curious what you guys think. Like, Trey, you walk away from that, and granted, it's one game. No KD, no Ben Simmons yet. Ben Simmons, you know, apparently has some back soreness that he's got to work out as he gets reconditioned for being on the court in NBA games. And KD's not quite back yet from that knee injury. But do you look at that game Saturday night and think this is like, oh no, here comes the Bucks with these odd third quarter problems for them, right? Or do you look at that and think, this is actually a really good sign for the Nets that they can have a game like this against Milwaukee and, you know, no Simmons, no KD, but Kyrie. I think it's like kind of a reminder of like, hey, by the way, Kyrie's good. And these are good role players.
I think it's a little bit of both, right? You look at the Bucks, they've been able to, you know, win games and be in the cream of the crop of the East. Right. Mm-hmm. But then they also have these problems where, you know, they have these third quarters, they have these countless turnovers at the end of the game and not running, you know, the offense is stuffy and not really fluid in how they want it to go. And that's something that they may want to clean up before going into the postseason. But then you look on the Brooklyn Nets side, that's a Brooklyn Nets win right there. Like, that's the win that they really want, and that's what they need to have. But then you're also looking at, like, if they're playing like that, first of all, Kyrie Irving, shouts to him. Hadn't played basketball in 2 weeks, comes out, has a magnificent game, 38 points. But then you think about Andre Drummond having a great game. Seth Curry, who's shooting 47% since joining Brooklyn, he's 18 for 38. Like, they get KD next week and potentially Ben Simmons a week or two after that. Mm-hmm. And then adding Dragic, who had a great pick and roll game with LaMarcus Aldridge and, you know, being able, I think Mo pointed out, you know, I mean, more so how they're using Irving as, like, you know, through the doing the Iverson cut and just kind of being effective that way. You know what I mean? More so, like, they're moving in a scary direction. And I honestly think with 21 to 22 games left, they're not too far off and where they need to be.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Yeah, I agree. Like, to me, I don't really look at it as like an indictment on the Bucks. Although it is weird that a team that used to just be so great coming out of halftime is so not, right? Like, I like this team is just like, or just like great in second halves and stuff. And like, they're just coming out, and maybe it's just, man, we got to get through this regular season, right? And the attention to detail isn't there, and the focus or, you know, urgency isn't there. And I actually get that if that's the
or
reason.
Or we already did it.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Just not that fire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so that, yeah, James, I wonder. Like, I didn't look at last night's loss necessarily as that, as like an indictment. I took more from it like, oh yeah, this Nets team, man. Like, if KD's healthy, what, no matter what Ben Simmons is, like, if KD's healthy, like, I'll take KD and a bunch of dudes, you know, over just about anybody most nights.
No, I agree. And I always thought, when we talked about, even before the deal happened, we've always kind of thrown out, what if Ben Simmons went to Brooklyn? Like, that just seemed like a great fit. But even just the pieces that they got in the deal to add a Seth Curry, a guy who can, I mean, Seth can put the ball on the floor, but he's also a stationary guy who can knock down, like Trey said, 18 of 38 threes. I think the pieces around Kyrie and when KD returns, like, it's just a better fit than having three ball dominant guys who, mm-hmm. of course, the goal is to have the best players in the league and hope it meshes, whatever. But like, from a basketball team building standpoint, this Nets team is leaps and bounds better than where they were just a few months ago. It's like, I mean, we talked about Simmons being kind of the perfect quote unquote star to put next to a KD, because late in games, he's going to defer. He could put pressure on the rim. He's going to make the right pass at the right time, accurate. But yeah, like, even adding a guy like Seth Curry, just another floor spacer. We talked off the air, Andre Drummond getting that, like, okay, if you're not going to go to college, you better get a, like, the kick in the butt. Yeah, finally.
Right.
And it's like, it's legitimate. Like, they have an actual, when you think of what works in today's NBA, like, it's not the most flashy of names. It's not maybe the most respected of names. I mean, in some cases, like, we talk about Drummond and Simmons, those are guys that have kind of been shitted on for most of their careers, but they fit. Like, it's going to, well, we'll see with Ben, but it feels like it's going to fit. As long as you have a KD and a Kyrie, two guys who can go get you buckets, and you are able to put around them a Patty Mills, a Seth Curry, high level role players. Like, I've always thought that trade for Brooklyn was one I would have done even before they did it. Like, I would have tried to get that done sooner.
I mean, it's funny, Mo, like, because I have been very anti Andre Drummond for years, right? Because I just think it's empty stats, and he's not good, and he's bad defensively. And there was that one year where, like, they were like -5 per 100 possessions when he was on the court, and they were like +5 per 100 possessions when Aaron Baines was on the court, right? And so I'm just like, yo, this dude does not play winning basketball, and I've felt like his play has backed that up. This season, though, when he was in Philly, when Embiid was out, and then what he's done early, like very early on in Brooklyn, or whatever, it does definitely feel like, I'm like, shit, like, Drummond's like playing well now. Like, he's not an all-star or anything. And I do think some of the rebounding stats are just odd in how skewed they are with him. Yeah. But I'm just like, yo, he's like, I can't deny, like, and I'm not. I don't hate him or anything. I just have never thought he was a contributing winning player. But I look at it now, I'm like, yo, this dude's good.
Yeah, no, he's kind of changed. You know, he's not the same player that you thought.
It's a little like Reggie Jackson, right? In that sense. Like, all of a sudden, Reggie Jackson's like, oh, I guess I got to get my shit together.
And he had some big plays for Brooklyn last night. I mean, the offensive rebound off, you know, for an and one. He had the big block on Giannis, you know, when Giannis is coming in transition. Like, these are plays we're not expecting that often from Drummond in games that matter. We're used to seeing it when they're down 20, but it's not in a close situation or scenario. And so, you know, he's a huge pickup for them in the sense of, he gives them something they haven't had, which is a rebounding presence. You know, as good as Claxton is, you know, he's not really a big rebounder. LaMarcus Aldridge isn't going to get you 15 rebounds a game or something like that.
Yeah, he was never, even in his prime, he was never a rebounder, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. And this is a guy that's like, okay, he's going to get you something on the defensive end rebounding, and you got to put a body on him on the offensive end. Otherwise, he's going to crash the glass and get them another possession. And the last thing you want against Brooklyn is you get a good stop, and then you give up an offensive rebound, and then it's a kick out to Irving for a three or Curry or those things. But I wanted to touch on what Trey was saying about Dragic. Like, Dragic only played 14 minutes last night because he's still trying to get back into the flow of things. But it just takes pressure off of Kyrie when he's on the court, right? Like, he gets to bring the ball up the court. They get to run some actions with Kyrie off of it. And I mean, off the ball, and allow him to kind of move around and even use him as a decoy. Like, it's just going to open up a lot of things for them. And my last thought, too, is just wait until we replace James Johnson in the short role with Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
Like, that's such an upgrade.
And have Kevin Durant out there.
Yeah. 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 Oh, by the way. Yeah. The other guy.
I wanted to add one thing about Drummond, just having covered him. I always thought for him to be the player that everybody wanted him to be, there needed to be a no question, clearly defined pecking order wherever he was. He just never had that in Detroit. Like, you look around, Reggie Jackson, Tobias Harris, like, if you're Andre, you're already an all-star, you're like, I'm gonna shoot this 7-foot post hook, like, I'm just, who's gonna do what's a better shot? Blake Griffin comes in, it's like, yeah, he's Blake Griffin, but like, I've been here. This is my team. I think for him, he needed like to be with a KD, a Kyrie, around shooter, like a definitive pecking order for him. Also, like, have the scare of almost not being in the league, but being in a situation where it's like, no question, I defer to these guys and let me just do what I do. And I think that was something that I always was like, I think if Andre ever got that, you could see what everybody, you could see him finally be what everybody always wanted him to be, as a big man in today's game.
It's it'll be interesting to see what that looks like if they play. Well, it's gonna be like the 20th interesting thing if the Nets and the Sixers play in the playoffs. Now that I think about it, but I'm interested to see because
we need it.
There's always been that Embiid Drummond thing, which was why it was funny to me that they became teammates this year. Just because that, I still think that's a very real thing. There's no way Embiid respects Drummond. Just because it's like 4 months together or whatever that was. Like, there's no way.
I agree.
And so it'll be interesting to see like just what he brings in that matchup, if he can just get in the way. Especially because, you know, Embiid like doesn't have the best playoff history, right?
Nope.
Like that's something where Embiid is going to have to probably put his stamp on this postseason. Even if they lose, he's gotta be great. Like it can't
be. He has a 2-year window.
Yeah.
This is a 2-year window for him to thrive. So this James Harden experiment could either be amazing for his career or it could hurt his career. And right now, like, again, thinking, you know, long term, if the Sixers sign James Harden for 5-year, $250 million, whatever it is, I think he's about to be the first $50 million player a year. And in this situation, they're going to have to at least get one title from this. You know what I mean? Like, that's the expectation again. You know, you can't be, you know, we're treating Embiid like a running back at this point. You know, our health was early on for him. Now he's playing MVP-like basketball, and the window is slowly closing because the East is the more dominant conference now.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
Speaking of the Bucks a little bit, Charles Oakley had some interesting comments about Giannis Antetokounmpo on the No Pump Fakes pod. And so Oak said, we'll give full context here. The Ahmad Smith, one of the hosts, was talking about Giannis and that, you know, having that kind of old school player and everything, right? That old school mentality. And Oakley said,
he's doing his thing. I mean, I was like skeptical because, you know, couldn't make a jump shot free throw. But after what he did last year, he won me over. You know, I was, you know, because I know he wouldn't have been a force back in the days.
Why is that?
He would have struggled because they would make him 2 jump shots. And you know, he wasn't going to be doing no Euro to the basket like he's doing Euro step to the basket and just get laid up. No, somebody going to knock his head off. He been come off the bench back in the days.
To which Ahmad Smith said, 2-time MVP coming off the bench, Giannis?
2-time MVP coming off the bench, Giannis? Yeah. I don't know about that, Charles.
Giannis as a 6-man is kind of heavy.
I don't know about that. With his speed, I mean, he's 6'10", 280, can run like a gazelle.
He's 6'10", 280, he can run like a gazelle. And Oak said, he ain't no 280. He's about 260, 250. I was like, well, okay, but still heavy.
What is the difference, though? You got someone who can shoot threes now, someone who can shoot mid-range baskets. He can throw elbows back in that era if he played. Like, he will be the closest thing to Shaq, right?
Remember when Giannis whipped that ball off of James Harden's face? That wasn't an accident, guys.
Like my main thing with this, right? And I love the 90s. That's the guys I grew up on. But they got to stop this. They need to take the Iverson approach and just bow out. Like, yeah, man. I get it.
It makes appreciate Iverson so much more just because of his mentality on this stuff, Trey. Like,
he just welcomes the young guys and let them have it. Like, oh, no, they'll be definitely way better than me. You have to let the people decide on that. But when you start speaking on it and saying, nah, in my era, back in my day, this and that, it looks so bad to the product. Like, we didn't even, if he wanted to argue about something, he should talk about illegal defense. He should talk about the hand checking and things of that nature. But like, don't say that someone who is 6'10", runs like a gazelle, jumps out of this gym, and can break somebody's wrist on a sweep through is not going to start or come up. This dude is it's so disgusting. And not saying that Oak wouldn't be effective in this era, because again, he could knock down a mid-range shot. And I think if he played in this era, he would probably spread out and be able to shoot the three.
He would have been banned from the league.
But he's no Giannis Antetokounmpo.
He would have been banned from the league.
Oh, yeah, no, easy call. But no, I think he would have toned it down. He would have just been more physical and kind of, you know, like that. But like, he's talking about Giannis like he's Charles Smith, man. Like,
right, exactly.
And not for Charles Smith to catch a stray. But quit playing with Giannis. This dude is one of the shining bright lights of what we've seen in this game.
I do, and most decorated.
Oakley and God bless the dead. Oakley played with Anthony Mason, who started 82 games, and you're telling me that Giannis would come off the bench in favor of Anthony Mason? Oh, again, God bless the dead. All due respect. There was a year, 95-96, Anthony Mason played 42 minutes a game. What are we talking about, Charles Oakley? Like, again.
And probably smoked a cigarate after.
Right, exactly.
During
halftime, he was chilling. No, it's like, what's frustrating about it, too, is like, Giannis has met every challenge, right?
Everyone.
Like, he came into the league super skinny. Look at him now, right? When you see the side-by-side pictures and everything like that. He's not fazed by anything. He's a terrible shooter. He works on his shot. Still not a great shooter, but he's worked on his free throws. He's not afraid to airball free throws in big moments and things like that. Like, this isn't a guy that would come into the 90s and be afraid. He would just be like, oh, okay, this is how we're doing it. This is how I'm going to do it then. I'm not, it's kind of ridiculous, and it's really getting tiresome with the older generation just constantly kind of crushing these guys and things like that. The league plays much faster now, things like that. I don't know how many of these guys would be able to keep up with the up and down the way the league's played now. I'm not sure about that and things like that, but just guys, cut it out. Let's just embrace it. We love you guys from the 90s. A lot of these guys are heroes. Stay that way and don't try to start painting this out and trying to trash the league now.
To say Giannis, okay, let me start here. To say Giannis wouldn't be a two-time MVP in the 90s, fine. I don't know if I agree, whatever, fine.
Michael
say,
Jordan existed. He would have taken
I mean, Michael Jordan exists, bro.
Yeah.
I don't care what Marvel universe you want to create. If Donald snaps his hand, Michael Jordan
MJ
is going
still
to be
those MVPs. Yes.
The MVPs. He might kind of Dieter Giannis's game a little bit, even more, too.
Yes. To say Giannis might not be an all-star, I think you're insane, but whatever. To say he won't start is crazy. Like, I don't know. Is there any way that was just like him in his bag and he's just trying to get off all these jokes? Like, there's no
probably
way he honestly
I mean, I
that.
Hope so.
That's crazy. Like, Anthony Mason started 82 games and was his teammate.
John Starks was the sixth man of the year one year. Like, John Starks.
Again,
like,
Oak, we got nothing but love for you, but you wildin'.
Yeah, like,
Danny Manning had half a knee and he got sixth man of the year one year. Like,
oh, gosh.
It was great.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As a
player, if you're the baddest guy in the league, you should be MVP. Now it's, oh, his team is in first, his team is in fourth.
I don't like that, because that's not a real MVP to me.
Thank you.
But when you look at a guy that I'll say is putting up crazy numbers, doesn't really have the talent like some of these elite teams have, and he gets his team into the playoffs, whether it's a seventh or eighth seed, that's an MVP to me, because if you take him off of that, they don't make the playoffs. I had a year like that, my 2003 year, I'm not playing with no other All-Stars. I think we got to the sixth seed, and I'm averaging 32 points. You take me off of that team, we're a lottery team.
Who won the MVP that year?
Tim Duncan got it that year. And you take him off of the Spurs, they still make the playoffs.
Whoa.
They make the playoffs.
No,
yes,
no,
they
no.
do.
No,
they
don't.
Yes, they do.
No, they don't, because a lot of those guys got their success off of him. Right. Yeah, he got double. He kicking out the Ginobili. No.
They have a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, Tim Duncan.
Speaking of old school stuff, guys, Tracy McGrady was talking about the 2003 MVP, saying that he should have won it. He did lead the league in scoring that year and ended up going to Tim Duncan, and T-Mac finished, let's see, fourth in MVP voting. Tim Duncan won, obviously. Kevin Garnett, 2. Kobe Bryant, 3. Tracy McGrady, 4. Shaq was 5. That rounded out. Actually, Ben Wallace. Ben Wallace got a first place vote. What are we doing back then? Jesus. All right, but Ben Wallace got a first place vote, too. So those are the people who got, and he finished 8th in the voting. So that was how the voting shook out. T-Mac, let's see, 32 points per game, 6.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists, shot 45% from the field, 38% from deep. Was phenomenal on an Orlando Magic team that was not very good, right?
They were 42
and 40. And
they were eighth seed.
Yeah, and like just to put that into context, all right, here is the top minutes getters for that Orlando Magic team, all right? Tracy McGrady, number one. Number two, Pat Garrity.
Shout out to Pat.
Number three, Daryl Armstrong. Shout out to Coffee. Number four, Mike Miller. Number five, Jacques Vaughn. Number six, Fat Sean Kemp. Number seven, Andrew DeClercq. Number eight, Gerald Sasser. Remember Gerald Sasser?
Oh, wow.
Number nine, Gordon Giericek. And number 10, Grant Hill, as he had the ankle issues. But so granted,
sounds like McGrady should have won MVP.
42 wins out of that team. Like, no, good no, Lord,
joking. Man. Don't Westbrook my MVP.
I'm joking.
He is right, no. though, guys. He is right. Like, Tim Duncan should not have won MVP. Shit should have gone to Kevin Garnett.
Kevin Garnett,
was
right?
Unbelievable. Yes. 23, 13, 6 assists, almost a steal and a half, over a block and a half, 50% from the field. And he led a Minnesota Timberwolves team to 51 wins. And that team, top minutes getters, number one, KG. Number two, Troy Hudson. Shout out to T-Hud. Number three, Rasho Nesterovich. Number four, Anthony Miller. Number five, Kendall Gill was still in the league and he played 82 games. Number six, Wally Szczerbiak. 7, Gary Trent. 8, Joe Smith. Shout out to Draft Picks. 9, Mark Jackson. Not that Mark Jackson. And number 10, Rod Strickland. I forgot Rod Strickland was on the team. Good Lord. So to me, KG should have won MVP, not Tim Duncan. KG also should have won Defensive Player of the Year, not Ben Wallace. But that's a whole other discussion. His point, Trey, was that Tim was in a system, right? And part of that system. But I also think, like, as we have gotten away, further and further away from the Tim Duncan era for the Spurs, and we've seen kind of how things went with Kawhi and everything, Tim Duncan might have been the system.
Yes. He was the system. Tim Duncan, not might have been.
Tim
he was.
Duncan would have averaged 30. Listen, if he would have ended up going to Orlando to play with T-Mac,
that would have been so fun.
We would have learned a lot. Yeah.
We would have, listen, first of all, I don't think the comparisons between him and Garnett would be so close. Like, facts. It would be, you know, that's the only thing that keeps him, keep Garnett close is because he played in a unselfish system like the Spurs. I do love Kevin Garnett. I think the hood picks Kevin Garnett.
Well, for years I thought that KG was just as good. And now as I've gotten, you know, farther and farther away from, I can admit, like, he's not just as good. But I also say, like, you look at the teammates that KG had versus the teammates that Chris Webber had, Tim Duncan had, or Dirk mm-hmm. Nowitzki had. Like, KG like deserves some kind of like Nobel Peace Prize or something. Like, he deserves something because he was dragging garbage. And everyone always goes, yeah, but he had Sam Cassell and Terrell Sprewell. One year right. That Sprewell wanted to get
look,
paid.
I'm okay with rooting for KG. But again, when you take the money, it comes with
it. Yeah, that's true. When you break
the
system,
that's why I don't
contract,
feel bad for Dame. I don't feel bad for a Damian Lillard when, like, once those guys re-up, right? And this is my strategy all the time. You sign, you fulfill your rookie deal. Once you re-up, that's on you.
Yep.
Once you re-up again, oh, I'm never screaming free you ever. Because you knew ever. I hate it. I hate it with a passion. Free such and such. Free such and such. Like, he did not want to take the $200 million.
Right.
You chose the money over winning. And that's okay. You know what I mean? Like, I don't remember who was on that, a member of that championship team. You know what I mean? I mean, I do remember Randy Brown. Shout out to Randy Brown.
Shout out to Randy
Brown. Or Judd Bushner. Oh, man. You know what I mean? Or James Edwards. You know what I mean? For the namesake.
Hey, yeah. But fake daddy.
When we really think about it, at the end of the day, pay me. I'd rather be Bradley Beal than Robert Horry.
Facts. Okay, but I just want to defend Tim Duncan here in this MVP, right? Because as he was the system. To say he's a system player is bullshit. Okay, the whole system was built around him. The post-ups, everything like that, especially in 2003. Later on, Pop started to go into the pick and rolls with Manu and Tony as Tim H. That wasn't then. It was still a heavily dominant post-up play for Tim Duncan, right? And just net rating, plus 18 per 100 possessions for Tim Duncan, plus 15 for Kevin Garnett. You know, it's defensively, the Spurs had a 94 defensive rating per 100 possessions.
Do I need to read the minutes getters for the Timberwolves to you again?
No, I don't care. I don't care. Okay. I'm ignoring that aspect. Don't worry. Yeah. In every argument, we all ignore our different things and things like that. No, I'm sorry. The team, 60 wins, unbelievable run. Tim Duncan deserved the MVP. And I'm not just saying that because I worked in San Antonio and I'm
fake
part MVP. Of the Spurs Mafia and everything that goes with
fake
it.
Fake MVP. But, and if Michelle Beatles listen, fake MVP.
I'm with you, Beatle. Let's go. Timmy got it, deserved it, earned it. And T-Mac, 42 wins, you're not going
to
get it.
He had to drag Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, David Robinson, Steven Jackson.
That was young Tony Parker. Young Tony Parker. Wild and out of control Tony Parker.
It was any age Troy Hudson.
I want to defend T-Mac real quick. I showed up to East Middle School in seventh grade for 3 days straight with an Orlando Magic fitted, a T-Mac black jersey, and patent leather T-Macs, one blue, one red. Right. So that's my MVP. I'll just let you guys know that.
No, I'll say this, man. I was T-Mac geared out. I had, the giant hoodies, every shoe he had, like anything T-Mac, like I was rocking all that stuff. T-Mac was... Like outside of KG, obviously, because I was super biased then, but outside of him, like T-Mac was by far my favorite player in the league. Like easily. Loved him more than Kobe, loved him more than Shaq at that point. Mm-hmm. Like everybody, like T-Mac was, there was just so much to his game, and he was just nasty. Like he was so good. He was doing stuff that no one else was doing in terms of how he was scoring the ball.
And Kobe's talked about it, like in how much like T-Mac, he's like, he could do everything I could, but to watch. And again, it's probably the Lakers Magic, Lakers Houston thing. But to watch you were watching a 6'9 Kobe.
Yeah.
And it was just insane to watch with even more efficiency, if we're being honest, mm-hmm. in most of these years.
Yeah.
I just think where T-Mac played is why it gets clouded because you talk to anybody 33 and under, like 33 to 25, like T-Mac, it was T-Mac and AI in the early 2000s, like no question, until Kobe started kind of like. Then Kobe got to the late 2010s, did it without Shaq. Then Kobe kind of took over. But those early 2000s, it was AI and T-Mac, no question.
AI and T-Mac might be the intro to a lot of our current listeners, current viewers.
Absolutely,
of this league's
100%.
First intro to basketball. You know what I'm saying? Like Michael Jordan, all them other dudes don't exist. The 2000 to 2003 and one mixtape stuff. That's all this era now.
Skipped my blue. Yeah, that's what we're talking about here.
And one thing, it's criminal T-Mac's not on the top 75.
Oh, insane, bullshit, man. Like
that's ridiculous. There's of the guys that are on the list that we can argue.
Tell me Bob Cousy's better than Tracy McGrady at basketball. Get out of here.
And Rick Barry.
I love how Zach takes no pot off to slander Bob
Cousy. 10-17 in the playoffs before Bill Russell got there. Great winner. Out of here.
With all due respect to Dame Lillard, he wasn't T-Mac.
No. He wasn't T-Mac. Anthony Davis isn't T-Mac. Like, get out of here with that stuff. That's crazy to me. like absolutely crazy to me. No, I think we, Trey, I think you made a great point there about like the, about the introduction to a lot of basketball for our listeners at that point. Like, I think we can all agree that that pecking order was like, three was probably T-Mac, two was probably Allen Iverson, and then one was obviously Ricky Davis. Like that, that like that's the big three in terms of just influential people from that era of basketball. And we'll move on, guys. We'll move on right now. No time to follow that up. We'll go to Lakerland, where LeBron James is clearing up some of the stuff from this week.
Some of my comments over the weekend was taken to a whole different area of, you know, could I see myself retiring as a Cavalier? I never said I would see myself playing in a Cavaliers uniform. I mean, I talked to Jason Lloyd and he asked me, and I said, well, I don't know what tomorrow holds, but actually me playing for the Cavs, I don't know about that. Could I see myself retiring as a Cav? And he asked me, well, like, you just come here and sign for a day and retire as a Cav? I said, that possible could be. And then things about my son, me wanting to finish my play with my son, wherever he's at, me going there. Like, you guys take souls. Some of my words and just like twist them to different places where they shouldn't go. And if I comment or compliment, you know, a GM that's in OKC, I really believe that he's done a phenomenal job.
So, a lot of reporting, a lot of it coming from The Athletic. Shout out to The Athletic, subscribe. Best coverage of sports on the internet. So, there have been a lot of like, rumors and reports and stuff about the power struggle within the Lakers organization. Finally, you know, after LeBron's comments at All-Star Weekend, nothing happening at the trade deadline for this team, some reports of what was, you know, maybe asked of Rob Pelinka versus what he wouldn't do versus what, you know, they could have done, all this stuff, right? We get to it, and finally Rich Paul is like, enough is enough. We need to have a meeting. Like, let's go talk this out. And so apparently they talked with Lakers, you know, ownership and front office and everything, and was everything's good there? Now.
Kurt Rambis?
Was Linda Rambis there? That's really the one that matters. Because I feel like she's got way more power than Kurt. But so we get the air cleared, and I think it's interesting from this standpoint, right? At this point, there's nothing that can be done about this roster. This is it until the summer, right? So to belabor the point and try to like strong arm anything and try to use any influence if LeBron was doing that, it's just, you're just going to be driving yourself crazy.
He plays with the roster. Who would he trade for if he was on another team?
Yeah,
not name Anthony Davis.
Right, exactly. And so they clear the air and they kind of get, and I think that had to happen just because we're at the point, James, where it's like nothing else can happen. You can't like strong arm them into getting John Wall bought out and then bringing him in. Like, there's nothing you can do. So you might as well like try to make the best of whatever this is, and then we'll see what the reports are when we get to the summer.
100%. Like, it's I don't even know where to start, because we all kind of are always been curious, like, how much input does LeBron have in the construction of the roster? Like, we've all heard, I don't think it's ever been like confirmed, but we've all heard the rumors that Pelinka wanted to do the Buddy Hield trade. It was LeBron and them who wanted Russ. Again, that's the rumors, whatever. I just always have been curious, and for how long has LeBron really dictated what these rosters look like? Because if it really is what we appear, or what it appears to be, that he is, has a lot of say, I don't think it's very cool to go out and act like there was something that could be done by the people who are paid to actually make those decisions. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah.
To act like we need to get this done. We need to add these players.
This isn't a video game where you can turn like trade override on, right? Like, you can't do.
Right.
Yeah.
Just because you're LeBron, like, yes, people want to come play with you, but there are rules and like financial implications and things that have to be met. Like, it's, yeah, like you said, it's not 2K. So if he actually did sign off, push for the Westbrook trade and many of the other trades we've talked about throughout his career, and for him to come out and act like, I need the GM to do something so that we're like, that's just not cool, because there's nothing he can do. They're handicapped as soon as they traded for Russ. As I said earlier, if LeBron was on another team and he's like, looked at the Lakers roster, who would I want as we're making this playoff push? Not a damn one of them. So I don't understand like making the hoopla about it when there's just nothing that could have been done. It benefits nobody and it adds extra, I'm sure, stress and chaos to the situation that's already stressful and chaotic.
for the last 3-4 months.
Yeah, I mean, part of me is just, I put a lot of this on the Lakers because for the most part, it felt like they've outsourced their player management in terms of too clutch. Who do you guys want? What do you need?
Right.
You know, and things like that. If Pelinka wanted Buddy Hield, he should have made that trade. He should have just stood tall and said, hey, I get it. This is going to be better for us. Trust me. And things like that. It's a hard decision. It's hard to do, but you got to stand up at a certain point. And we also see this with the Knicks, right? Turning these teams over to just agencies to run it ends up being a problem. And you,
but this has happened forever. It's not just the Knicks and the Lakers, right?
Players have input. Yeah. Players have input.
No, agencies do that. Like,
I get it. But like, well, what I'm saying is, though, like, ultimately, though, you got to make the final decision, right? And you, all those years, Kobe was demand trade for Jason Kidd. Get me Kidd. Get me, you know, so-and-so. And the Lakers were like, no, just wait. That's not the guy for us. And eventually they make the move and they get Pau Gasol and it turns into two championships for them, right? Like there's a level of standing tall. And I get your point of agencies, agents pushing everything behind the curtain and things like that and moving things. And even now they're probably feels even more powerful than before, but it might just be it's more out in the public. But I think it's along those lines, though. At a certain point, the front office has got to step up and just be like, no, that's not going to work. And then it's funny to me for LeBron to be like, well, you guys traded for us. Dude, you were interviewing people. You had Dame come over to the house for lunch, interviewed him. You had Russ talk you into, hey, I can change, which was never works. It's just like all those things. It's everybody here.
Maybe
that
he
fault.
Just meant outfits. He can change outfits. Like maybe that's all.
That's true. That's true.
No, but like, all right, look, the agency stuff, this isn't just a Knicks CAA thing. It's not just a Lakers clutch thing. Like this has happened with Priority. It's happened with everyone. Yeah. Right. So that's like, that's a thing where agencies do try to have that influence over a singular team. If you were going to marry yourself to an agency, clutch is not a bad one to do, right? That's a good roster right there of players. Like, I don't necessarily fault that. But, yeah, like, you're right. Ultimately, the pragmatic approach
just
is...
Just stop.
No, because I'm going to then tell you how you're wrong. The pragmatic approach is you've got the final decision, or Jeannie's got the final decision on this, right? And you influence that in how you pitch it to her. I get all... Like, that is... pragmatic, but I don't know that it's realistic. Like it's not like he didn't have the power of a Jerry West. He didn't have the power of a Mitch Kupchak in Lakerland, right? Where those two could just be like, this is what it is.
Yeah. And we've been doing this.
Yeah. And I'm not saying he hasn't earned it necessarily, but he hasn't been on the job that long. Yeah. And there is like a certain level of like wavering success since he's been on the job that maybe keeps things up in the air. And maybe it's just a difference between, no offense to Jeannie Buss, but just we've seen some dramatic things in that organization after the passing of Dr. Jerry Buss, right? Like he just was a different type of owner who commanded a better culture, and keeping that culture going when now new people can influence and everything is very difficult. As we saw with Jim Buss and all that stuff, right?
Yeah. And I think we underestimate, and I know some of you, Mo, you've been in front office organizations. Like, I think we might underestimate how hard it is to please arguably the best player in the world. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's easy. Like, I could understand just doing what LeBron says. I don't know if there's threats of leaving, or I'm not putting that out there. I don't know. But I could understand how there is a fear of upsetting the maybe the greatest player we've ever seen. So if there is maybe a move that you think should happen, but LeBron's like, no, and you see how much is left on my contract. Like, of course you have, are you 100% sure that if you do this move, it's going to work? You're probably not. So why not just keep the GOAT happy?
Well, you did the moves he wants, and now he's waxing poetically about Sam Presti at All-Star Weekend. Like, you're going to get fired either way. You're going to get fired either way. This is what I have the same problem with coaches who tend to just coach scared. You're going to end up getting fired. It's just the way it goes. This is part of the business. Go out your way. Go out guns blazing. Go out your making the decisions and things like that and rolling that way. And I get it. Like, it's very hard to please star players. So at a certain point, you just got to say, fuck it. And just go. Yeah.
And I look at it as my former relationship with Columbia House, right?
Oh boy.
Like, I'm out there buying all this shit for, like, you know, you get the 15 DVDs for one penny each, right? And then you get locked into, like, you got to pay $30 for this, like, copy of you know, Snatch, or this copy of, like, you know, Smoking Aces or whatever, right? Like, that's what you end up doing. And my thought is, yes, I know I signed up for this, but I can't be held responsible. Right. And I think that's the thing with, like, LeBron with this, like, this construction of the roster. Like, yeah, I know I wanted this, but, like, you're supposed to keep me from this. This is on you. So that I don't bullshit. Mind LeBron now looking at the roster and be like, yo, this is a bad idea. Isn't this your call, not my call? Like, on the influence stuff? Like, don't listen to me. What are you doing?
How many listeners were around for the Columbia House DVD? Look, man, CD,
if AI and T Mac were your introduction to basketball, you were in they that Columbia House game, I guarantee. Yeah. All right. If Carmelo and LeBron were your introduction to basketball, probably don't get the Columbia House thing. But if it was T Mac AI, no, you're it. Trust me. You got that shit in the mail just the same way I did. You were like, 15 DVDs for a penny a piece. That's too good to be true. Guess what? It was, but you had to find out the hard way. Sometimes you needed to just let your credit card or your debit card expire and not renew it, and, like, or report it stolen and say, like, hey, I knew a new card with a new number. That way they stopped billing it, and then they keep saying, hey, we can't process your payment, and you just ghost them. I ghosted Columbia House for like 20 years. Like, yeah, sometimes you have to do that.
Was not ready for Columbia House. That's hilarious, bro.
That's where we're going to end it. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Basket Buds of the Athletic NBA Show podcast. Make sure you're checking out all the podcasts on the Athletic Podcast Network. Make sure you're checking out No Dunks, What Did I Miss with Michelle Beadle, all the team-specific shows, and subscribe to the Athletic that has the greatest coverage of sports on the internet. For Trey, for James, for Mo, I'm Zach. Leave it locked on The Athletic.
That's kind of heavy. All right.